Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Many of our ID the Future listeners might remember that in the fall of 2010, we had some podcasts with Dr. Donald Ewart, a microbiologist who spent many years doing research in microbiology and also into the immune system. Well, we have Dr. Ewart back on the show with us today to talk about how evolution has impacted the literature on the immune system. So Dr. Ewart, thanks for coming back on the show with us.
Glad to be here, Casey.
Well, Dr. Ewart, I understand that you were actually an editor of an immunology journal for a number of years, and you actually became very familiar with the type of literature that's being published regarding the immune system. Can you tell us a little bit more about this experience?
You don't become an editor just out of willy-nilly. I was actually trained as a comparative immunologist in one of the leading evolutionary immunology laboratories in the United States, and spent several years studying the immune system of the chicken. So basically for that reason, I was asked to be an associate editor for development and comparative immunology and I did that for a period of maybe 4 years back in the late 90s. It was during that period and even subsequent to that I've got to read a lot of the literature in comparative immunology.
So Dr. Ewart, as an editor, you obviously got a very high level of familiarity with the kind of literature that was being published on the immune system. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about how that literature impacted evolution. In essence, what I'm asking is, was the literature on the immune system directly related to evolution and how the immune system evolved? Or was evolution, when it was discussed, added on, as the scientist Philip Scell once called it, just a narrative gloss?
That's correct. In fact, the journal that I was a section editor for, at least an assistant editor, was the Journal of the Development of Comparative Immunology. And back in the late 90s, 1990 to late 90s, I was an assistant editor. I had an opportunity to review a lot of papers that had to do with the study of immune systems in different kinds of organisms. And for that matter, I even was studying the immune system of the chicken at the time. And what I realized, and was apparent to me, I never gave it a second thought, that all of these papers really had to do with very interesting studies into the actual structure and function of different immune systems in different animals. These were comparative studies, and there was virtually no mention of evolution, or it wasn't the primary issue involved in most of this research. Evolution may have been discussed like a coda at the end, maybe as a kind of a tag on to say something about how this all might have related to the bigger picture of life. But that was not the issue that was being addressed in these research papers.
So, Dr. Ewart, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that most studies on the immune system that purported to study evolution were really just studying comparative immunology, where they essentially compare the immune system of one type of organism to another. And of course, this is very interesting and very important, but it doesn't necessarily tell us anything about evolution. So could you give us perhaps a specific example where somebody was doing comparative immunology, but then there was an attempt to over-extrapolate and essentially link those findings to evolution?
Well, Casey, I can give you a personal example. When I was doing a postdoc in the laboratory I mentioned earlier, I had stumbled upon a particular protein that was, in many respects, structurally and genetically, it was inherited in a very similar fashion as the proteins that were found in mammals, particularly in humans, which we consider to be part of the major histocompatibility complex. These now we know as DR antigens. Back then, we called them immune response antigens. Well, what I had done was basically characterize some aspects enough to be able to say, look, at the antigens in the chicken are very similar to the antigens that are in a human. And there was a temptation, I think, on my co-author's part to make the statement that these antigens were homologous in writing this for the paper. And I was very critical of that point, because I realized using the term homology or homologous implied that the proteins in one organism were related phylogenetically to that in the human, and the chicken implied that there was a phylogenetic relationship, when clearly that was not what my research was about. Mine was purely descriptive, And therefore, I felt that that was going beyond what the evidence had to show. And I think that was an example where I would think they are similar, but there was no rational basis for me to say that they were homologous based on the research that I had done.
That's right, Dr. Ewart. And obviously, one of Michael Behe's main points has been that homology does not necessarily demonstrate Darwinian evolution. I mean, the mere fact that two structures are similar does not show that you have a Darwinian pathway. It might reflect common descent. It might not. That's a separate question. But to actually demonstrate Darwinian evolution, you need a stepwise evolutionary explanation, and homology doesn't provide that.
Well, I think the example I gave, though, is really to illustrate what I think is found throughout the literature that I find in immunology, where studies are taking place that actually look at structures and immune structures in different organisms, that 99% of these merely are descriptive studies. They're comparative studies, but they're not dealing specifically. They do not deal with any evolutionary mechanism by which these things that they find similar are related evolutionarily. Basically, this goes back to the fundamental thing that got me interested in this was a lot of the literature that was presented at the Dover trial was touted as being evidence for evolution, when in reality, most of the basis of those, whether they be review articles, which were based on scientific papers, that when you look back at the basic scientific research papers, there's absolutely nothing to do with evolution. It has to do with basic descriptive biology. And it's only when the people who write the review articles try to make a case for it that they now try to go beyond what is basically the scientific data to make some broader philosophical interpretation of this and fit it into some other structure that the scientists themselves did not.
I think that for students who are listening right now, there's an instructive lesson. I mean, I can remember sitting in class and hearing about data. We would learn about biological facts that we've discovered, and the professor would then force an evolutionary interpretation onto that data. And perhaps sometimes that interpretation was plausible, but it often required ignoring other data that was contrary. And of course, these evolutionary interpretations are incomplete. You might find that two proteins are similar, but to demonstrate that the similarity is the result of Darwinian descent with modification requires a huge amount of explanation that is almost always lacking. So the point here is that when you hear the claim that two proteins are homologous, therefore they evolved from a common ancestor, you need to ask yourself, what is really the hard data? Okay, yeah, we have sequence similarity, but going beyond that might be more than the data is actually telling us.
I think another point to make is that evolutionary theory does not really contribute to guiding or predicting or developing theories about what might happen because it is so plastic that it can almost be made to fit any given situation one finds in biology. So as an experimental biologist, and as I would say most experimental molecular biologists I know, evolution is irrelevant to their research.
That's interesting, Dr. Ewart, because we hear so often that evolution is the cornerstone of modern biology and that without evolution, we can't do biology. But from what you're saying, the immune system, from your studies, you don't need evolution to undergird your research. And sometimes evolution is sort of added in after the fact. I think Phil Skell calls it a narrative gloss. You called it a coda. But it's sort of an afterthought almost. But as far as directing that research to understand how the immune system works, you're saying that it's not necessary to have any considerations of evolution.
Better yet, I could say that a knowledge of evolution is not necessary for becoming a good molecular biologist or a good medical doctor.
Well, those are dangerous words, Dr. Ewart, but I think you make a good point. In fact, your point reminds me of a policy that a biology professor at Texas Tech University named Michael Deeney has, where he states that he will not write letters of recommendation for students that are applying to med school if they are scientific skeptics of Darwinian evolution. And his website actually says, quote, "The central unifying principle of biology is the theory of evolution, which includes both micro and macro evolution, and which extends to all species. Someone who ignores the most important theory in biology cannot expect to properly practice in a field," unquote. I mean, I personally feel that this policy is patently discriminatory because it refuses to treat students on an equal basis if they scientifically disagree with Darwinian evolution. So Dr. Deeney is, of course, welcome to endorse macroevolution if that's what he wants, but to claim you can't be a good medical doctor, if you doubt that view, I think that's totally unjustified.
Well, I think the quote that you gave for this biologist is reminiscent of Dobzhansky's quote, which he has said, nothing in biology makes sense apart from Darwinian evolution. And it begs the question in both cases, what do you mean by makes sense? And that is a fundamental question. What are you talking about? I think the issue is that you have to ask, what question are you asking? If you're asking how things work, absolutely everything makes sense apart from Darwinian evolution. You don't have to have Darwinian evolution involved in determining how things work. But I think what Dobzhansky and this other guy are driving at is another question, and that is, why are things the way they are?
Well, you know, Dr. Ewart, it was actually the famous defender of Darwin, the biologist Thomas H. Huxley, who said that science commits suicide when she adopts a creed. But yet, isn't it ironic that when we hear the statement from Dobzhansky that nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution, that's a creed. And we hear that creed repeated over and over again. I mean, I know that you have been at education hearings listening to people trying to say that students should not learn about any scientific criticisms of Darwinian evolution. And people say repeatedly, nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. But that is a creed. And creeds are the death knell to science, because science is supposed to be open to following the evidence wherever it leads, not following something that almost starts to sound like a religious dogma. So I believe that Darwinian evolution can be a science, and in many respects is a science, but when you start to treat it like a creed, that, frankly, that's not science. So, Dr. Ewart, we appreciate your time today and sharing some of your wisdom about the immune system and whether the literature about the immune system is guided by evolutionary thinking or simply guided by scientists who want to understand how things work. And I think you've helped us to understand the answer to that question. So thank you very much. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.